You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.
All right, let's get back to some boring subjects.
Understand the risk to our country.
Freedom brings people together.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at WeAreLibertarians.com.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians, the Chris Spangle Show. Old habits die hard, man. 10 years of saying that. Welcome to the Chris Spangle Show. Today we are discussing why you need to understand history, why you should learn history. Our guest, Caleb Franz, is here. He is the new host of Profiles in Liberty, so make sure you subscribe to it now in iTunes and all the podcatchers. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Warning, this show is for adults by semi-adults, so the language is sometimes strong and offensive.
I don't know what I said,
Welcome to the Chris Spangle Show. Our goal is to help you sound smarter while talking to your friends. If you struggle to understand politics, we explain it from an independent, libertarian point of view. With all of the irreverence it deserves, we toss out the screaming heads, put people before political parties, and give context to the news to make you think. Now, here's our host, Chris Spangle, a 15-year veteran of politics and media.
Welcome to the program. Again, my name is Chris Spangle. It is so great to have you here. If you're new to the show, and many of you usually are, you can learn more about my bio and beliefs at chris-spangle.com. And I'm the founder of the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network, which now has 13 shows, soon to be 14. Talk about our new show in the coming months. Not just the new show we're talking about today, more new shows. We're building an empire. We are building an institution in libertarian politics, and we are so glad that you are part of it. And we could not do it without our Wall Plus patrons, and we thank them so much. And you can become a Wall Plus patron, WAL. And get commercial-free shows. You can get the History of Modern Politics podcast with Matt Whitliff and I. You can get the back catalog. You only get like 450 shows in the free version, but there's 1,500 other episodes that you can access if you are a Wall patron. So if you're just listening for free and you're not adding value back to the shows that give you value, then you're missing out. Not only do you help us continue to grow, but you also get some cool things back, including t-shirts and other merch. So, but we want to especially thank our $100 a month members: John Pusilo, Casey Feldposh, Lars Nordskog, Jake Edel, Matthew Durbin, Jeff Bennett, Reinhold, Christy Avery, and Jason Doolittle. And thank you to every one of our Wall Plus subscribers. You can visit joinwallplus.com and sign up for our Patreon and continue to help spread the message. And I got one of the most meaningful letters from one of our patrons. I will not say their name. You'll hear why. But, you know, this, if you ever look in the background here, if you're watching on YouTube to the live show, this is like my little wall of honor here. You got all my buttons and, you know, the Constitution, like up here. These are all the Republican buttons, and the Libertarian buttons are over there, and my H.L. Mencken book, and all my credentials from my career, my David Letterman autograph from 1994. And then this little patch here is from one of our Wall patrons, and Brandon came by and gave that to me, stopped and met me in person. And, you know, this patch has been to Iraq and Afghanistan. And when he came back, he was just searching for libertarian podcasts, listen to ours, and said, "I want to give this to you because if it had not been for finding your show, I would not be here." And this letter that we have today is certainly within the same vein. I'm going to mute Caleb and Reinhold here. I'd like to start by saying it's a true honor to see my investment into We Are Libertarians become as big as it is. If it wasn't for you and the entire Wall Network, I would have most likely continued down the road of extremism with the Klan. So this person was in the Klan and found our show and started listening over the last year. From your ability of looking at both sides, it inspired me to critically think about my life at that point, which led me to find liberty and love within myself. You and the network deserve every dollar I can give, within reason. I don't agree with the within reason. As a way of saying thank you, and with the hope of inspiring someone else like me. And I just want to thank that listener, and thank you to all of the people that listen to this program that continue to promote the network, promote the Chris Spangle Show, donate, give value back, because we're the cool, it's easy to do a show, and let me bring in Reinhold here. It's easy to do a show, Reinhold, and do this week in and week out and never really hear much, or you'll get your iTunes review will be like, one alt-right guy talking about how we're flaming leftists and just crapping on the program. But then you get a letter like that and you go, oh, wow, this work is meaningful and this has an impact on people's lives. And the main message of the Chris Spangle Show and the goal of the We Are Libertarians Network is to inspire individuals to make their lives better, because the stronger the individual, the stronger the community, the stronger the society can be. And once you become economically strong, physically strong, mentally strong, emotionally strong, you start finding ways to increase liberty in your life. And that's been a core tenet, but also the libertarian message is self-reliance and self-government. And that message leads people like this person to just radically change their lives to be more loving, more caring, and more self-respecting. And so, Reinhold, it's just a true honor that we were able to influence this person in that way. And we always thank people for their letters that let us know that this work is important to them.
I definitely agree. And more letters like that we could get in. The more fuel it gives us to continue doing this and to continue providing as much value as we can to you guys. So,
yes, I want the listeners to take away that you're part of something special, that you are part of a network that continues to influence and impact people in a meaningful way. And this community is just great. And I love getting letters like that. So joining the community, joining our little band of brothers and sisters, I think, and I'd love the audience, if you can tell me otherwise, because Trisha and I have been talking about this, Trisha Stewart Mann and Hannah Cox, we think are the only two female libertarian podcasters without a male co-host. They're just the main host of their show. So we're honored to have that distinction with Trisha. But let's be honest, we're libertarians. It's mostly a band of brothers. And joining us is Caleb Franz. Is it Franz or Franz, Caleb? Continuing our tradition of me not asking ahead of time how to pronounce your name.
It's Franz. But honestly, everyone kind of goes back and forth, so it doesn't bother me either way.
Well, here in Indiana, it's Franz.
Exactly, yes. As someone who grew up in southern Ohio, it's Franz.
It is great to have you joining the network, and your podcast is Profiles in Liberty, and people can already subscribe to that in the feed. You can go to your Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts, and search for that. While you're at it, just search We Are Libertarians, and you can subscribe to all of our shows. But tell us a little bit about Profiles in Liberty. What is it, and what is your goal with it?
Well, I am very excited about this program. I'm thrilled that you were interested in it whenever I reached out to you about it, because this is something that's just been honestly something I've wanted to do for quite some time. You know, on my last podcast on Liberty, I would do a few of these types of shows. It's a history style show. It's more research heavy. It's more just going through certain elements throughout history to tell a story about the history of liberty. Those were always my favorite shows that I did on my last podcast. And I thought it would make for a great program as a whole. So that's what I'm hoping to do. I'm hoping that in profiles in Liberty, that I'm able to elevate certain figures throughout history, and elevate them to the level of hero status that I think that they should be. This isn't to say that everyone, you know, that every possible person that you were ever told about in school is going to be elevated to that status. You know, obviously, like when I was on Brian's show a few weeks ago, one individual that we kind of talked about and distinguished with that was with Teddy Roosevelt, how I think he was someone who has been elevated to that level, but isn't really just quite deserving of that. But there are those that are, and there are those who a lot of people don't even know about. So what I'm trying to do is trying to bring people heroes that they can look to and to be inspired by, and hopefully some people along the way will find some inspiration in that.
So, you know, I started the History of Modern Politics, and I think history is an important part of this show. I still get letters about our World War One episode, and that's the feedback from that and my enjoyment in the research of that show led me to start talking with Matt Whitliff about the History of Modern Politics, because I think it's important for people to have the backstory. You know, it's Reinhold and I, you and I have talked about, was it The Golden Gate? The book that you read, and when you read the book about immigration policy in the early 1900s, you see jumping out at you so many different things. Like when I'm a huge fan of reading books about the 20s Klan because I find it super fascinating. A third of my state joined up with the Klan at the time.
And it's called the guarded gate.
The guarded gate. And yeah. You know, when you read about the 20s Klan, like I mean, a third of Indiana is not participating in lynchings, right? The 20s Klan didn't even lynch anyone, and it was mostly anti-Catholic. But, like, the strains that came out of that still are in the words of people, like, the folks in Charlottesville are, like, quoting things that the 20s Klan talked about. So when you learn history, you sort of see these strings, and that's – so I'd ask you to subscribe to the History of Modern Politics and join the Patreon. You can hear it now or wait till 2022 to listen to it. But – that's sort of my philosophy, is that you can understand the conversations now a lot better if you understand how we got here, because it's just a rolling thing. It's not like, I think, Caleb, my question or ask for your commentary on this is that people sort of think that once you're born, that's when all the conversations start, or the fight for liberty started, or like you hit 18 and all of a sudden it's tabula rasa and everything began at that moment. And that's just not the case, is it?
Right. Yeah. That's certainly the way it feels, right? Your introduction into the world, or at least your introduction into adulthood is suddenly when everything matters and when everything is important. But a lot of the things, like there's nothing really that's new that we're dealing with. There might be new facets to the different issues that we're talking about, but, in a general sense, everything that we're dealing with today has been dealt with in some way or form or another throughout history, throughout all of history, not just American history, but throughout all of time. And to not look back at that and to not relive what they went through and look at the lessons that they earned from that. Is foolish, and it's just setting us up for failure in the long run.
Yeah, I've seen that in organizations that I'm in even. When I went to a 2016 Central Committee meeting for the Libertarian Party of Indiana, they were solving problems that we had solved in 2009. and we'll let Reinhold wax poetically about the Denver Convention later, but there's a famous saying that history doesn't repeat itself, it rhymes. And I would definitely say that's true. So, you know, you had a great show called Mill Liberty, and Brian Nichols was always pushing me. He's like, you got to add Caleb. Caleb would be great on the network. And it just didn't happen for whatever reason. But when you approached me with the history show, you're like, I'm just focusing on the history. Like, why the shift from libertarian politics and the libertarian movement and talking about that to history? What caused you to do that?
So I spoke a little bit on this in the prelude episode that we have recently released, that anyone who wants to can go and listen to that right now or after the stream. But I got a little, you know, there's several factors kind of played into it. I got a little bit burnt out with just the, you know, the bickering and the back and forth that comes with petty politics. That's just not very, I don't like, you know, arguing with a lot of people, honestly, though. I'm very yes, opinionated, but I don't actually like confrontation that much.
Right.
And I just think that a lot of times, a lot of politics gets really unnecessarily divisive. When in reality, yeah, I find history and philosophy and talking about ideas and talking about events and things that happened in the past, I find all of that a lot more exciting. And I find it, you know, it's a story. And that's a lot more exciting to talk about stories than it is to talk about what opinions I might have or might not have. So I decided probably, you know, earlier this year, I was kind of going back and forth because whenever the pandemic hit, I kind of hit a wall and the podcast, my Liberty kind of like withered unceremoniously into not being a thing anymore. And I was kind of going back and forth between, do I want to bring this back or do I want to start a new program? And for a while, I was thinking I was going to bring the Liberty back, but I came to the conclusion that, like, no, I need to start something different. I need to start something new and make it very distinct from what I did with Mill Liberty. And I thought that history would be the best way to do that.
Question from the audience. Darla says, Caleb going for that Robbie Sov Liberty look. Wow, Caleb even sounds like Robbie. Are you or are you not Robbie Sov from Reason Magazine?
I can neither confirm nor deny that at this moment. Maybe wait until we're in the same room together to be able to decide that for yourself.
But, well, if you start doing cancel culture episodes on the new podcast, we'll know for sure that you're Robbie Sov. So
yeah.
Give us a preview of this first season. You're going by seasons. Yes. So who and what are you talking about? What is the theme of the first season? And do you have other seasons planned out?
I do. I have quite a few seasons planned out right now, which is, I think, going to be great for this network because it means we're going to have a lot of content in the near future. Right now, the first season, I actually just wrapped up all the scripts for season one this past week, and I started recording the programming yesterday. And the first season is on the signers of the Declaration of Independence. And I picked 8 individuals from that I thought would, you know, it's not necessarily that like 8 random individuals or 8 people that they have to be actual like defenders of liberty. So I pulled out 8 people and I wrote down, some scripts are longer, some scripts are shorter, but I have about 8 individuals who I'm looking at. And some of these individuals you will know, some of them you've probably never heard of. And that's kind of intentional. My goal was to elevate those who you may never heard of, and then bring those who you may have heard of and try to force you to look at them in a new light. Something that you may not have considered before or squash some sort of misconception that there may have been about them, and ultimately just bring some new perspective for the listener to look at these individuals.
So, like, what's the thing that you've learned the most so far in researching this first show, this first season?
You know, I have actually really taken away a very, I don't want to say different look, outlook at liberty itself and my view of libertarianism, but there's certainly some new nuances to it that I didn't have before. One episode, I'll give you an example that I'm really looking forward to. It'll be episode 3, is on Benjamin Franklin and how he basically created the idea of like the American community, and all of the different ways to get involved into your community. And he really believed that like the best way or one of the best ways to strengthen and to defend the principles of liberty was to make the every man as involved in their local community as much as possible. Because back then, you know, we kind of take things for granted today, but back then it was very hard to kind of break into either politics or break into whatever kind of society you're trying to.
Yeah, you still had an aristocracy. I mean, the one thing about the founders is that they didn't necessarily, this was not a democratic utopia that they set up. They set up the existing power structure in the continental United States, set it up so they would continue to be in that power structure and remove the old power structure. And, you know, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, you had to be a white male landowner to be politically active.
I mean, there's some variations in that, but obviously, but you know, that's generally around, you know, around accurate. But with what Franklin was doing in Philadelphia and in Pennsylvania, he was trying to make people more educated. He founded a library system that was actually private. That's it's a really cool thing that he did with it. It was a private library system, the first of its kind. But the idea was to make people more virtuous in society and to make people more educated in society. And he believed that that was the best way that people can defend their personal liberties, was to get them as much involved and have as much of a stake in that as possible. And the whole time I'm looking through this, I'm like, this is like the libertarian idea of localism to the max. And you know, I guess I've always understood that, but it kind of shed a new light whenever I look through that for that episode.
Yeah, I mean, this is a core belief of mine. I was in politics 10 years before I started We Are Libertarians, which is 10 years old now. And over these 20 years, I've seen Reinhold in the Libertarian Party of Rush County, for instance. You know, they showed up to county council meetings and no citizens had ever shown up to a county council meeting in Rush County. And so the county council was passing these $100 million spending projects to put their name on it. And because they showed up with a VHS, you know, a video camera, basically, and put it on YouTube, a $100 million project got canceled. Because all of a sudden there was some transparency. And so, you know, the last year, I see all these, a lot of libertarians running around saying it's time to start shooting. And every time I ask them, have you ever been to a city council meeting? Have you ever talked to your local representative? Have you ever talked to your congressman? Do you know who is on your county council? You know, who is your mayor? And the answer is always no. I've never been politically engaged. And when you go back and read Paul Revere's, I think it's Paul Revere's Ride by, it's just escaping me, but it's a fantastic book. That's a guy with three names. But you read that book about, you know, revolutionary Boston, all of these guys are intensely involved in their local politics. They're all well known, you know, and they've been petitioning for 10, 15, 20 years in some cases, in trying to get things rectified. If you show up to your local community and get involved in local politics, you'll be establishment within 5-10 years because so few people are actively engaged in local politics. And
honestly, it goes beyond the political sphere as well, because a lot of problems that people are like, why aren't the government doing this? They're problems that can be fixed without the involvement of the state, any state, whether it be on the federal level or whether it be your city council. And more societies, you know, in the 1700s, that was what was popular, was that all these different societies would start to pop up to either talk about these different ideas, to get people more educated, or just to figure out how to deal with issues, the issues of their day. And having more of that of a mindset to just, you know, you don't have to go to your city council to try to get your neighbor to do something. You can just talk to your neighbor to try to get them to do something.
This sounds fishy. These voluntary exchanges through peace and harmony. I don't know about all that.
It's a revolutionary idea. I think I
need to put a gun in their face and threaten them. That's the libertarian way.
Yeah.
Go, Reinhold, why don't you jump in here? I'm sure you have thoughts.
That sounds like hard work, right? Trying to build a society from the ground up on your own. But that's always been my look at libertarianism, is that we should be trying to replace the power structures that are existing now with our own voluntary power structures. Prove that they work. Once you prove that this works, more people are going to accept that and want to do that. Because one thing I've noticed when I talk to people about politics, one of the first things I will ask, and I'll say, what I believe is that people should be free to live their lives unless they're hurting somebody else. And invariably, most of the people I talk to say, yeah, I agree the same thing. Well, that's libertarianism. I mean, that's the base core of libertarianism. But they always include the but, or the, yeah, but in this situation, or we kind of have to do this. And then once you break down what those buts are and you find solutions for them that aren't related to putting a gun in somebody's face and making them do it, people are more willing to jump on your side and become libertarians because of that. Right. I just think that the majority of people, especially in this country, feel that way. But they're getting pulled to these extremes of the left and the right, because an authoritarianism, because there's something that they care about that they feel like the only solution is government.
Well, people confuse Twitter and social media with real politics, and it's not. It's
anti-social media.
Yeah, it's networks of people.
Right, and that's one of the great things about the internet that I'm trying to get going, I see the potential is there for us to really be able to bypass and have transparency, right? And bypass the gatekeepers of the information and the gatekeepers of the power by having us communicate directly with each other. But there's a problem with that too, right? It can be abused. It can be misused. It can be something that can cause more strife than not. And we have to be vigilant of that, but we also need to realize that this is the greatest power that we could have too, right? So just like a gun is a very powerful tool, but it can be misused. The same thing for the internet, the same thing for free communication. We have to be, vigilant of that. So by focusing on doing the things that, When we see a problem, like we saw a problem with healthcare years ago, and we spent billions of dollars on either side arguing about what the government should do, what the government shouldn't do, blah, 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 blah. If we just spent that money and time and effort and just fixed the problems ourselves without government, we wouldn't need all that stuff. We wouldn't have those programs, because we would have the private programs, the voluntary programs fixing the solution to begin with. In my state, we have private organizations that will pay for medical care for people who are under poverty limit, right? And it's all voluntary done. And we need more of that. We need more of the people taking care of the problems themselves, and less reliance on I'll only do this. I'll only help if I make sure that my neighbor does too. And the only way I can make sure that he does is put a gun to his head and make him do it. And in my opinion, if you're not willing to personally go down and put the gun to the guy's head, to your neighbor's head, you shouldn't be voting for someone else to do it for you. Right. So, I mean, that's how I always have seen it. And that's how I think that it's not necessarily localism as opposed to nationalism. I think there's a place for both. I think that you could have organizations that work across different states and different counties and things like that, that can coordinate with each other and do a good job of it. But it should be focused on helping the individual. It should be focused on helping the people and not focused on putting, forcing people to participate.
Caleb, do you want to weigh in at all?
I have just been noticing that some thoughts that just come up into my mind while you were speaking is that, you know, a lot of times libertarians get a rap for only caring about themselves or being selfish and only caring about the individual for the individual's sake and not the broader community or society as a whole. And I just think that is the completely wrong way of looking at everything, because especially in that episode that I alluded to that's coming up here in a few weeks, that is essentially what Benjamin Franklin was trying to do, was trying to make a better, safer society for the individual, for the liberty of the individual person, by making society as a whole more virtuous and more interconnected with each other. So it's different from a collective, which is kind of erases the individual identity out of everyone. And it's about bringing everyone together into a community. And there's a very distinct separation between those two. And I think libertarians shouldn't be so, you know, knee-jerkingly opposed to whenever they hear, you know, words like community or you know, anything like that, because they are good things. And these are ways that we can, you know, certain tools in society that we can use to put in place of government. It's not necessarily saying that we're kind of,
I think
having
like
a stroke right now on the words.
If you look at the letter in, you know, politics can bring meaning to people because it helps them make sense of the world that is going on around them. And politics doesn't have to be inherently evil or inherently, combative. Like, you know, Indianapolis is a success story in many ways because their politics kind of comes second here. You know, if you listen to Leaders and Legends, I invited my friend Robert Vane on to talk about History Today, and his whole entire show is 120 episodes talking about how Republicans and Democrats and libertarians and independents and nonprofits and the government sector and the private sector have all worked together to put goals first and politics second. It's not about who's getting over on who using the state to fight against each other. And as a result, you have one of the most thriving sectors of school choice and charter schools, and that pushed IPS to become increasingly better as a school. And IPS 15 years ago was just a dog pile, and right now it is, you know, my nieces are in IPS in the Indianapolis public school system, and my sister, who was a teacher, loves it. They're getting a great education because that competition opened up, and it wouldn't have happened without the Republican governor working with the Democratic mayor to put kids first and expanding choice and freedom in that one sector. I mean, there's many different ways that when community comes first and politics comes second, you start to see wins. Caleb, give us one more like important takeaway that you found that we'll see threaded through that first season.
I am, you know, trying to give people heroes to look up to. So it might not necessarily be that everyone that I do an episode on, you specifically will be inspired by or find this to be your new favorite person or anything like that. I have found that there's at least one area that I think everyone will find a certain level of, if you care about these ideas, if you really appreciate the ideas of liberty, that everyone will at least have a certain amount of appreciation for this person and a newfound perspective and how to look at these individuals, specifically in the founding era, as we'll see in the first season and later seasons throughout all of history, both American and eventually world history.
So who have you been inspired by?
Who have I been inspired by? Well, there are some obvious ones from the get-go that I already knew that I was going to enjoy. The first episode is going to be on Thomas Jefferson, and it's a really exciting episode. I think a lot of people are going to be surprised in a lot of ways by some of the information that I put forward. But there's some other ones. One in particular that really struck me was Benjamin Rush, who signed the Declaration of Independence. He was a doctor out of Pennsylvania, and he was actually remarkably ahead of his time on the issue of criminal justice reform. He was against the death penalty. He argued for massive reforms in the medical community, where there was kind of some overlap with the criminal justice system. And a lot of these things that sound like things that you might hear about, you know, in by talking heads today when talking about the issue, he was already ahead of it, you know, 250 years ago. And that's something that I think is inspiring to look at, because we kind of look at that time period in a different context of like, oh, these things, nobody really looked at these issues like with criminal justice reform or like the death penalty or something like that. But here's someone who was, and here's someone who said like, no, we need a more just, humane society with the way that we are treating, criminals and criminal justice reform has always been kind of a passion, area of mine in particular. So finding that out about him, I was particularly inspired by, yeah.
Ryan Hold, who's a libertarian that you've been inspired by?
I don't know if you would call him a libertarian, because it was 150 years ago. But there's a person named William Graham Sumner, who, when we talk about how libertarians are given this idea that we're not supposed to, that we're all about the individual only, we only care about ourselves, we don't care about anybody else, we don't care about society. He was like the first professor of sociology at Yale University, but he was also a staunch anti-war person, and he wrote some great essays, and one of them is still one of my favorites today, is called The Forgotten Man, where he breaks down society and charity and shows that what we, you know, what the people who try to help do is, instead of person A and person B deciding that they're going to individually help someone we call person X, they decide what person C is going to do to help person X, right? So they're deciding not just for themselves, but for what the whole society is going to do. And they're going to make that person do it, irregardless of what his personal situation is, right? And he's considered the forgotten man. Now, over the years, Franklin Roosevelt stole that phrase and turned it into more of a progressive type of idea. And then it's been tried to get transferred.
Frickin' Roosevelt,
again,
man.
And,
right, Caleb? Frickin' yeah. Roosevelt.
Just any Roosevelt.
Any Roosevelt is really just trash.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was really at the forefront in my mind in the 1880s about pushing individualism, pushing anti-war, all the stuff that you would call a libertarian today. That's what he was kind of talking about. And he was a professor of sociology. He's one of the preeminent professors of sociology as that was starting to become a learned practice, right? So this notion that we shouldn't be concerned about the sociology of people and how we interact with each other is, and be libertarians, is, makes no sense to me from that.
Reinhold asked me who mine was.
Yeah, who is yours, Chris?
Thank you, Reinhold. That's a great question. I really appreciate it. I would say, I don't know that he's the most influential or impactful, but he's my favorite, and it's H.L. Mencken. I mentioned him earlier. If you don't know who he's probably written more words than any other human in history. That's not my estimation. That's like what some experts say, because he started in the late 1800s as a newspaperman just doing copy. And you can on Amazon buy like basically everything Mencken's ever written. Somebody's gone through and like here's all of his newspaper writings from 1842 or 1898. I mean, and it's just like, you know, Mrs. Donaldson had her bike stolen today, all the way through. You know, he had a really multivariate career in media, and he started at the Boston a Baltimore newspaper. Went on to write for the Baltimore Sun, and he really worked from 1898 to 1948, and he was one of the leading voices against the progressive era, and he was hugely influential. He became incredibly famous in the 20s, one of the biggest names in pop culture, covered the Scopes Monkey Trial. You know, and Mencken was, a lot of libertarians love him, especially a certain crowd, because he was biting and, you know, really stuck it to the man. But when you really read Mencken, he was an individualist first, and said that I don't care what the crowd thinks, this is what I think is right. And that is what challenged people. It wasn't that he was intentionally trying to inflict pain on other people. He was just declaring his opinion and not going against the crowds. I mean, his main issue was fighting against utopian thinking. He was largely moderate and basically looked at Wilson, FDR. They both hated his guts because he was a hugely influential critic that nurtured a critical movement against them in the Smart Set and the American Mercury by elevating different voices. He didn't have like a driving ideology. He did call himself a libertarian. He's one of the first people to use those words. But what he did in the Smart Set, and especially in the American Mercury, was nurture a lot of budding libertarian voices like Albert J. Nock, and some of the foundations of our modern movement started in those pages, along with in the Freeman, in the first half of the 20th century. That like not being swayed by one side or the other and really just speaking out. Sorry, I had Taco Bell for breakfast. Not being swayed by that and just saying, I'm an individual and I don't care what everybody else thinks. This is what's right or wrong. You know, through both wars, World War I and World War II, he was a staunch anti-war voice for, you know, what was then called isolationism, but non-interventionism. Because what you have to remember about World War I is that from 1848 to, you know, the early 1900s, you had a ton of German immigrants move here. And most of the Midwest was German. And it was a huge voting block. And Wilson, the reason Wilson didn't want war to achieve his second term was because he didn't want to piss off those voters in the Midwest. And then he flip-flopped. And Mencken was really a voice for those people saying, you know, not everybody's all in on what the propaganda says about this war. And then in World War II, it was much harder. He was not pro-Hitler. He was pro-German. He was pro-Kaiser. So he wasn't a fan of Hitler, but he was against the war. And so he got kind of called a Nazi, if that sounds familiar to people. So I just think he's an incredibly fun voice. If you want to read about him, William Manchester's book is really good. He's a great biographer that went on. Manchester wrote, you know, a Churchill biography, a JFK book. He was a huge writer, and this was his first book about a man that he really spent a lot of time with in Mencken's later years and had a lot of great access. So I forget what the book is called. I think I got it, and it's The Life and Riotous Times of H.L. Mencken. So hugely influential on me in a lot of ways, and really interesting. We are almost out of time for this segment. So, Caleb, final thoughts from you on your show. How can people listen? What else do you want to get across the audience that maybe you didn't get to mention yet?
So Profiles in Liberty is the name of the show. If you have forgotten, it is going to be on July 1st is when it's going to debut. And just subscribe to it now. It's up on any podcast, wherever you subscribe to things on your own podcasting devices. And also, I have a Substack newsletter that is biweekly. There's actually going to be one going out today on Saturday here. And that will be important, especially in between seasons. I'm going to keep content pushing out so that way you can get updates on the show. And so I highly encourage you to subscribe to that. And also, I'm on Twitter. So just give me a follow at Caleb Franz.
Cool. Very cool. And you can go to WeAreLibertarians.com and find it there, too. Well, Caleb, we wish you the best of luck. We'll be having you back on to talk about other issues very soon. And we appreciate you coming on the network, and we're glad to have you.
Can't wait.
All right. Well, now, when we come back, normally we would have a news breakdown, but I'm going to be self-indulgent and introduce you to my fiance. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the Chris Spangl Show. Reinhold, I think she's nervous.
You're just talking to us. It's no big deal.
Yeah. There's only seven people on YouTube.
Yay!
Okay, I need to turn your mic up.
Your favorites.
Let's see here. Hold on. We had to do so many commercials so I could get this all set up. Because, you know, Reinhold, you used to come here, drive 45 minutes to my house and sit in the studio. I mean, late 2019, we just were all like, all right, you got to drive forever. Harry doesn't want to deal with traffic. We can do this just as easy over the internet as we can in person. So I don't have a studio. Like, if you used to watch, like, you know, from here to here, it was just like a curtain and it was like a real setup. But we don't have that anymore. So we just had to rebuild it. So this past Sunday,
like a real living space again. Isn't
I know,
it?
You know, here on the show, and this is more for longtime folks. You know, we used to do more personal stuff on the show, and we don't anymore because I've just tried to become more and more obsessive about relevancy and what do listeners find relevant. And usually, Reinhold, they don't find you and me relevant. They find different thoughts. Especially Reinhold, they find different thoughts about politics that we might lead them to relevant and interesting. So I don't talk a lot about my personal life on the show as much anymore. It was damn near a comedy show in the early days of the show, really the first 5 years. And then around 2017, 2018, we started to like really go, okay, we have a big audience and people like this and we need to dive in on that. And we really pivoted to become more information heavy. That's why we got the 16 pages of show notes, all that stuff. But I know that there are still a lot of people that listen that do care about Reinhold and me and the people that are involved in We Are Libertarians. And so I fully admit that I'm being self-indulgent at the moment. But for you longtime listeners, I got some great notes because on Sunday, I asked Reagan Hunt if Reagan Spangl.
No,
hold like this.
No, almost Spangl
to marry me. Now we've been dating for a couple years, and show him the ring. Closer, just really get in there and show him.
This is
all that Patreon money. No, I'm just kidding. And we met through your mom, actually.
Yes, we did.
She tried to set us
up a couple times.
She set us up tried to set us up in 2017. You didn't take to it. I have to show him how I met Reagan way back when, because this was super embarrassing. I got Spike Cohen. It's so embarrassing that Spike Cohen shared it. Not to humiliate me, but just because he loves humor as much as I do.
It was spreading hope.
Yes. So, gosh, I know I posted it somewhere. Oh, I know where I posted it. So you and I met in 2017 when I slid in the DMs.
Yep.
And how did I slide in the DMs?
With a wave.
The wave emoji.
Just a wave.
That was it. Just a wave. That's how it all started.
No words, nothing.
Nothing. You need to talk louder, honey. You can't hear yourself not talking?
I can hear myself talking. Can you not hear it?
It's just a little quiet.
Well, am I not loud enough?
There we go. Now you're loud enough. So I just waved, and she waved back, and then I said, do you ever get told you look like your mom? Reinhold, not exactly a panty dropper.
I am surprised that there was anything after that line. That conversation just didn't stop right then.
There was kind of a delay. Kind of how I would expect there was a lull.
Yes, there
was a lull.
Just continued after that. Cassandra said, hey, I love those personal notes in the early days. And I did too, and I do too. And maybe we'll do a little more of that towards the end of the show as opposed to the first 20 minutes like we used to. Because I do think it's important for you to know my life and Reinhold's life and a little bit about us and where we're coming from. There were episodes where it was like 3 hours of us talking about us, and that's just a little much.
Well, you got to be careful, though, because my wife has been wanting me to get her on the show because she has things to say.
Oh, no.
So you'd be careful what you do here.
Yeah, I mean, and listen, my divorce happened during an episode of the show. If you are a patron and you go back to the archives, in late February 2014, there's an episode with Gina Gregg and I where she's basically packing her things and walking out on me. Did you know that?
I did. That was very uncomfortable.
Yeah. So
it was you having the podcast was the final straw, wasn't it?
Kind of. Yeah. She felt ignored a lot because I was a workaholic, and she was jealous that I was having conversations with Gina. And I don't think it was, story time with Gina really rubbed her the wrong way. Which you can listen to in the podcast feed. And the funniest of that never got posted because I lost it because I got divorced. And so everybody who listens, I got great notes from longtime listeners like Sam Wotees, who was just like, I've listened so long. I know what you've gone through, and I'm so happy for you to meet somebody like Reagan. And so we met, we started talking on and off. And then started talking in early 2019. And just have become best friends since, have mm-hmm. we not?
Best friends.
Yep. So
best friends forever.
I first met you at 16, 17?
17, I believe.
And it was at a libertarian event.
Yep.
It was Glenn Greenwald, Bruce Fine, and somebody else who's a big name now but was not popular then. Your mom always took you to a lot of libertarian stuff, did she not?
Yes, and we always would ask to go too. Like, that was something always on our radar. We followed, like, the Young Americans for Liberty and a few other different things.
You went
like
to a lot of Mises conferences?
Yes. Well, my sisters did. I more went to the ones at IEPUI and.
Okay.
What was a club? I'm trying to remember the name of it. I'm drawing a blank. So the Republicans.
Republicans?
It's like Young Republicans. College Republicans. They had a bunch of different programs put on, which had a lot of more libertarian thinkers there that would come and speak for them. So
yeah.
IPUI and Purdue.
So, we had the big stuff. I'm involved in libertarianism. Like, when you first learned I was a podcaster, what were your thoughts?
I didn't have that many thoughts on it. Honestly,
as most women don't, right?
I was like, but he has a job.
Well, he's a libertarian, so obviously he has a podcast, right? I mean, that's
right.
The way it is. It's a requirement.
A lot of people say they have a podcast, but I had listened to your podcast, actually.
Did you? Mm-hmm. So that helped?
A little bit, yeah.
Because you knew I wasn't crazy?
Well,
I didn't like that.
He knew what kind of crazy you were.
So yes,
exactly.
I was her kind of crazy. Yeah, and so we didn't start dating right away. We became friends, and you were going through stuff, and I was just, we were friendly, and you have a daughter,
mm-hmm.
and who we call Squish. We won't say her name. She and I have become best buddies.
best buddies.
Yep. So
we, even she says best buddies.
Does she? Yeah.
Best buddies forever. That's what she says.
She's very cute. And we have just a very happy life. And you live because we're Christians. There's as Stone, if you remember Stone, our former social media director, used to say, no cookie till marriage. So you live in the apartment complex here.
I do, but a good walking distance.
She has a walking distance, so there's no sin.
Our first year I lived in Brown County, to be fair. That was a driving distance.
And so you and I have been able to see each other every day. And so we, Paul here is saying, note to self, start a podcast. That way I can be lonely publicly. And I was very publicly lonely for a long time. But a podcast will help you get chicks if you slide in their DMs. You got to actually slide in their DMs, Paul. You can't just not slide in their DMs. Validate.
I'm blinking twice.
All right. I said the other day, Paul could have totally dated that girl. Was I right or wrong about that?
100% right.
This cute 23-year-old.
She was adorable. I don't know. Her hair was on point, too. She was really cute. Totally looked like an art student. I think she actually was. making dog sounds. I don't think you guys can hear that.
You're a puppy.
You're the best puppy.
Yeah. So,
we don't like dogs.
We are definitely, I mean, for me, it's the most supportive relationship I've ever been in. We've never had a fight.
Nope. Honestly, we have not.
The closest we came
is good because.
Is it true that you will not let me wear cargo pants?
I refuse. I grew up homeschooled, and that is very much that is a factor that cannot be.
What does homeschooling have to do with anything?
There was a dress code.
Was there?
I really do think that my siblings and I would play spot the homeschooler, where you'd go out and you could just spot the people that were homeschooled. And one of the ways you could tell if someone was homeschooled was if they were wearing cargo pants. I swear, 100%. I would actually go up to the families and be like, are you homeschooled? I mean, aside from the fact that they had like 12 children, that was one of the giveaways, was cargo pants.
We're doing a podcast. Do you want to come say hi? Okay, climb out of your chair. You are the oldest of how many children?
11.
So she's like that homeschooled.
Extra.
Like libertarian conferences, probably gold buried several places in the backyard.
Live on the compound.
Did you have the Ron Paul homeschool curriculum?
We had cutouts of Ron Paul. We had signage for Ron Paul. We had the t-shirts for Ron Paul. I have shaken.
You've shaken his hand?
Yes, I have. I have. Yep.
What's wrong? Come here, Squish.
You're the poo-poo.
Say hello.
No, don't lick it.
No, don't lick the microphone. Ew. Say hello.
Ew. Can you say hi? Say hi. Say hi. Say hello.
Say swipe or no swiping.
You have to say words into it. That's how it works. Oh, fantastic.
Oh, you want Peppa on TV? Okay.
We'll get that for you. Just sit down.
Escaldra says, tell me you're in a cult without saying cult. Was your homeschooling Ron Paul world a cult?
No. No, it was not. Ish. There were definitely... okay, so it's like you have your homeschool like people that you know, and most of the people that I was friends with were pretty normal.
Pretty normal, like Jeremiah, moral normal, because he was homeschooled.
Yeah.
You think Jeremiah is normal?
Yeah, on the spectrum of normal. Yeah, sure. We'll go with that.
Like Levy Rainey from Liberty Explained, she was homeschooled. She's super normal.
Super normal, yes.
But Boss Hog of Liberty, I would not say is normal.
Okay. In person, he acts more normal.
Okay.
There's that.
I guess you're right, yeah.
Like when we've hung out with him, he's acted normal.
Normal-ish.
Sometimes you have to like keep it act up, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, most of my friends were not.
He's just not tweeting for Libertarian Party of New Hampshire or anything like
that. Yeah, right. Yes. No, Jeremiah is normal. And your sister has been on the show.
Yes, Alexandra.
Because one of the ways that I tried to slide in her DMs was inviting her on the show to talk about homeschooling. And she couldn't do it. But she's like, my sister was in radio. You should have her on. So I had the backup plan on. I was like, okay. She came on to talk about.
She also kind of looks like my mom.
No, she doesn't.
I'm kidding. No. I'm joking.
You and your sister Lauren are like carbon.
We
copies.
We look like exact carbon copies.
Yeah. So
you can look 11, on like my
11
Facebook
siblings.
Banner.
How many male? How many female?
Five girls six girls and five boys. So
she doesn't know.
Well, no. I think of it always like I have five sisters and I have five brothers, and I'm at the tippy top of the pyramid. So I just look down.
So,
and it's even.
And you're a teacher.
And I am a teacher.
Yep.
Teach Spanish.
So I think the audience, you can hear she's very, very stable and normal, and we are very happy. And she is not like previous administrations. Not
See, when you have to say that stuff, then right. It makes people think that the person's
Well,
crazy.
Longtime listeners remember my dating history. And then
everybody here is thinking, okay, what's the catch?
Yeah. So... We got thousands of nice comments when we posted it across the platforms, but we did get one. He called you a gold digger.
Ooh.
Now take a look around this luxury apartment. Would you call me? Are you dating me for my wealth?
No, I am not. I would say your wealth has gotten better since you started dating me.
That's true. Very true. Yeah. It's something about a good relationship makes you go, oh, I should stop spending all my money.
I'm the better one with money. I think, yeah. In this relationship.
You're the nerd and I'm the free spirit.
I am.
And then you've made me lose weight.
Yes.
So there was another comment on the Spike Cohen discussion. Is that now you've made it, you and he have both made it unreasonable for libertarians. They have unreasonable expectations that they can go out and do the same thing.
Slide in DMs, yeah. But see, you can slide in DMs all day, but you have to like follow that with like good content, right? Like you can't.
Like waves.
Yeah. Maybe.
Or you look like your mother.
Yes, but there were, you're not sitting here because I'm a dope, okay? Admit
or
it.
Asking how many kids they want, only like a few messages into the conversation.
Oh, geez.
Give me this. Give me that ring back.
I earned it.
The 30-day return policy is not closed out yet.
No. I earned this.
So, yeah, the other one was, it was a girl on my Instagram, and she said, shit, I knew I should have slid in those DMs when I had the chance. She's just with him for his clout.
Oh.
No.
No?
See, Reinhold, clout really runs out when you're on your third day of being hangry and bitching about buying a suit.
Yes, but I knew he was hangry. We walked in, he was acting a little bit uptight, and I was like, I looked at him and I was like, did you eat today? Because he never is at all short with me. And he was like, no, I have not eaten. I was like, okay, good. And I just walked away.
Yeah.
Not me. No, for none of those reasons. I love you. Uh-huh. We have a lot of things in common. Like, we get along, yeah, as far as, like, theology-wise.
Temperament. Yeah.
I mean, just little, just random things that just make life really a lot more enjoyable. We don't like to fight.
No.
And we like to discuss things.
But we're not passive-aggressive about it either.
Exactly. We're not like that at all.
Like 4 days later,
you're a very hard worker, and I'm a hard worker.
Yeah.
So it doesn't even faze me. He works a lot, but he definitely puts time aside for me and Squish, and I really value that. But yeah, he's a hard worker. I'm a hard worker.
See, when you've been married once and it didn't work out, you try to learn from those mistakes so you don't have to go through that again. So I always, as much as, you know, the Wall Network, and I started a consulting business where I'm teaching people podcasting. So if you have a podcast and you want me to help set one up, if you don't have a podcast, I can help set it up. If you want, you know, you want to get to where We Are Libertarians is at, I'm teaching people for a handsome fee how to do this. You know, and so I've got that, and then I've still got my full time job at Bob and Tom, and you know, been going to college. Okay. So there's just always and the pat down. So there's just always something going on.
Liberty
but,
explained.
Yep. But so I always just try to make sure that I take the time for the two of them and not blow it. But you know, I went to therapy for 4 years to be a good husband and stepdad, and I think it's paid off. I think it's worked, right?
Yeah.
You got to meet my therapist and personally thank her.
I did actually thank her.
Yeah. So, I've I've never hit you.
God, no. That's like, that's a low bar, y'all. If you're listening to this, that's a low bar. There's higher things.
I'm with him because he doesn't hit me.
Could you imagine?
No, unfortunately, I know it. So I just wanted you all to meet Reagan and Squish and just come in and join our lives. And you actually are the one who are like, can we go to Libertarian Party events? We went to two this past week.
Yes.
Where'd we go?
Out of the shell, Indianapolis, and I can't even remember. I was so tired.
Hendricks County.
Hendricks County.
Yep. And then we're going to Carmel and volunteering for their outreach booth.
Yep.
So
Squish. We'll probably all be matching wearing blue because that just happened to be all of our clothes are blue now.
Like, didn't mean to match, but it happened.
Just
so
happens. Red, white, and blue.
Yep. So anyways, Reinhold, any further questions?
Has he even asked any questions?
I don't think so. I think he's getting PMs from people.
No. You do learn things from the first failed marriage. I can tell you that too.
For sure.
I learned the most important thing in a marriage is that you A, like, and B, respect the other person.
Yeah.
Because that didn't happen in my first marriage and it was not a pretty time. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, we didn't have anything in common, and I still care for my ex-wife, and I think she was a great person. You know, I don't have anything disparaging to say against her. I really don't, and really liked her family, but it just wasn't the same as this relationship where Reagan and I are partners and happy, and I really enjoy going to meet and see her family, and she enjoys mine, like, you know. We don't go looking for things to be upset about at the other person, you know? And I think that's been the biggest difference between us and every relationship I've ever had, where other people that I've been with go looking for a reason to be mad at that person, or here's why you're not good enough for me, or here's why you're, you know, you're pissing me off today. Like, you don't do that. I'm a very annoying person. I'm a very hyperactive person. I'm a very, like, grumpy person sometimes, and you let that roll off your back. I think if you didn't, you'd be crazy. You know what I mean? Like, so I think that helps a lot too. And vice versa. You're very annoying. No, I'm just kidding.
Lean back.
That was a joke. You were supposed to laugh. All right. Well, there's a first fight for everything, Reinhold.
We want it on air, though. So if you're going to do it, make sure the big first fight
on
is on air.
On air. Fight.
We can get some views out of that, I think.
Very good. Thank you guys so much. Anything that you want to say?
No.
Tell them how much I love the audience.
He loves y'all very much.
Don't say it like I mean it. Tell them how much I talk about how much I love this
Literally
audience.
Every day for hours. He talks about the audience.
Yes.
Every day.
No one loves you as much as I do. So say goodbye, Squish.
Bye-bye.
Say hello.
Hello.
Say, oh, toodles.
Donuts.
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 I did promise her donuts. Yeah. You're such a good producer, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, you are.
Do you want to go swimming?
Yes,
let's go swimming.
Is that your favorite? Okay. All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you again next week. You need what?
Swimming.
You need a swimming suit? Do you need cheese?
Yeah.
What else?
Cheese and donuts.
What?
She lives on cheese and donuts. I mean, we go through how many donuts? We at least buy a pack of donuts a week. I mean, for all that we're doing for like being healthy and losing weight and doing all that.
We only feed her vegetables.
Wait till you give her a cheese Danish and she has both of them at the same time.
I love cheese Danishes, but I don't share them with her.
All right, I'll talk to y'all later. We'll see you next week.